always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, Senior Lakers Insider, as well as lead Lakers content creator for Offside. Joined on this fine Tuesday evening. Brad, it is one of those weeks where it's like, damn, this week is kicking my ass. And then you look and it's only Tuesday. We are definitely in mid to late July. Brad Rowland of Locked On Hawks, of Hammer Territory for you baseball fans out there. Thank you very much for hopping on, bud. How you doing?
First of all, I'm well. Second of all, thank you for having me. It's my pleasure always to talk to you about any topic whatsoever. So I appreciate you having me.
It is always fun. So over the years, when we've had these conversations, it's been about Austin Reeves on one of them. It's been about DeJounte Murray on another of them. Two actually good basketball players. This time is going to be slightly different because we're going to be talking about Jonathan Kuminga. So we'll see, how this one plays out. As always, please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Please turn on notifications both for the show and for YouTube so you get the notifications for the show. And then if you guys are listening to the show in podcast form, please subscribe wherever it is that you get those podcasts. Preferably on Odyssey, but anywhere you get them is perfectly fine by me. Today's show is brought to you in video form here on YouTube by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA. Make a $5 lineup of your own. And if you win that lineup, again, there's no reason to not bet anything not extremely conservative on this one. You get $150. So just bet $5 on Shohei Ohtani getting on base or something like that. And I think you'll do pretty well there. And you get $150. All right. So today on the show, like I said, we're going to be talking about Jonathan Kuminga, the talks between Kuminga's camp and the Lakers, and the Lakers with Atlanta and Atlanta with Kuminga. Everybody is stalled out. Everybody is just standing and staring at each other with finger guns. And it leaves us here talking about it for now the 23rd straight day. And Brad, I want to start here because, there's been a ton of reporting about this situation. And there's been a ton of reporting about where this thing might be heading and all of that stuff. My question to you is how did we get here where the Hawks had this player option on Kuminga? He wasn't terrible for them after he got to Atlanta. He's an enticing youngish player. Why is he an unrestricted free agent?
Yeah, I mean, I'll try to do the short version, but it kind of has to go back to even Golden State. A lot of it goes back to the Warriors where, last summer, less than a year ago still right now, he signed this contract that he just finished where it was reported that he had, I think it was 3 for $75 on the table with a team option in the third year. And they declined that, which was a little bit strange. They didn't want to take that deal. They ended up on the short-term deal. I think they signed it in September. It took a long time with the Warriors. It was well out there that it was almost designed to be traded. The Warriors kind of – they didn't hate him, but it was him and Kerr didn't fit, all that stuff, right? Everybody probably knows the story by now. And then go to the season, and look, Kuminga was not on my radar. I'm sure this happens to you sometimes. A trade just comes out of nowhere, and you don't hear a thing about it, and it just pops up. And the Hawks really, really try to not let things get out in the media, and they just – in the blink of an eye, it was Porzingis for Kuminga. And I don't mean this the way it'll sound, but it was kind of one problem for another in some ways. Kuminga just couldn't stay on the floor. He has this very mysterious illness. Sorry, this is Porzingis.
Porzingis.
Yeah. Apologies. Couldn't stay on the floor, right? Very mysterious illness. no ill will, but the Hawks were frustrated because they just didn't know when they were going to have him, when they weren't. And it was like hard to operate because he's such a unique player, all this stuff. And the Warriors were ready to move on for Kuminga, and everyone kind of knew it. And they basically just swapped contracts. They swapped expiring contracts, at least functionally expiring contracts.
Yeah.
And the Hawks had this team option on him, which you referenced, that they could have picked up for sure. It wouldn't have been crazy, but it was expensive. It's $24.3 million that they declined. And I think we now see, if there was mystery about this a month ago, there's not any mystery about it now. The market does not value him at that number. Mm-mm. That's very clear at this point. The Hawks, because of the part of the reason why the Hawks wanted Kuminga, not obviously they like the player, his ability to put pressure on the rim, which I'm sure we'll talk about, like what kind of player he is. He had skills that they liked, but part of it was also that there was a lot of like versatility in the contract. And part of that was that they could maybe trade him before the option decision. If somebody mm-hmm. wanted him on that team option, they looked around the league. I mean, very open, not I shouldn't say openly, but like I knew for 2 weeks before the option decision that they were trying to see if they could trade him before the deadline on the option for value. And the answer was clearly nobody wanted him on that option, or they would have traded him on it, honestly, for positive value. So it's like, okay, we can decline this option now because the Hawks don't believe that he's a $24 million player. I agree with them on that, frankly. And once they do that, like, you're not closing the door on bringing him back. All that's doing is making him a free agent who is unrestricted, as we all know. But because there wasn't the incumbent team to like have a fallback, like the Hawks have never closed the door on him. But like, it's that simple. Like, he wasn't worth the team option in their mind, and I think in the eyes of the league. And once that happens, you are a free agent. You can go anywhere you want to. But I think we'll probably get into this. Like, there's always been this kind of weird, at least on the reporting side, of like what his side believes he's worth versus what the market believes he's worth. And then if that's
not even reporting in one case, remember Aaron Turner went on the Hoop Collective podcast.
That was a year ago,
what he thought he was worth.
Yeah. I think we could probably assume it's not a lot different now. I mean, a season has happened between that. And yeah, I think you said this before. I want to make very clear. He played fine with the Hawks. He wasn't incredible or anything, but he played totally fine. He was a rotation quality forward for them. But I mean, even within the last week or two, there's been reporting. I've heard the same that they still now in the dead of free agency where nothing's really available to anyone that's not named LeBron or even Peyton Watson's having a hard time right now. Like they're still asking for 20 plus million dollars a year annually. And it's like, you don't have that market. It's very obvious you don't have that. So that's why he's an unrestricted free agent. And it was because the Hawks had this team option. They liked him, but not at that number. And I think that I know they talked about a potential lower AAV multi-year deal, but what I just said still applies. Like Kuminga's side wasn't amenable to that back when they would have had to do it like a month ago, right? It would have had to be in late June.
Yeah.
And they weren't ready to take a lower number, and maybe they should have, but here we are on July 21st.
He's having a Dennis Schroeder offseason. You know, it's one of those things where he and his camp have a very clear idea of what they're expecting, and the league has a very different idea of what he's actually worth. And part of the concern there is some of the stuff that you kind of hear behind the scenes. I did a lot of talking to people there in Vegas during summer league, just asking like, is it really as bad as it appeared to be? And the answer was frankly, yes, it was like that. You know, there's the infamous food in the in the family area that Kuminga's camp was taking from everybody there. That story, you know, popped up a couple of times. And you know, it's just one of those things where it doesn't even necessarily need to be about Kuminga specifically. He might just be getting really bad advice from whether it's his agent, who has a bit of a track record now with some interesting clients. And then he might have just people in his camp that are immature. And we see that often, and it's very difficult for players to sometimes get their camps under control. But now we're reaching a point here where the league is starting to say very clearly, all that stuff, that's got to stop. All of the, you know, agent going on Hoop Collective, stealing food from the all of that, like that stuff, and this outsized view of who he is as a player, that stuff has to stop. It's now time to mature a little bit and actually fit in within the team construct. And I guess my question to you here is, like, do you think that's a possibility?
I do. I mean, without knowing Aaron Turner individually, I don't know him well. He doesn't know me. It's not anything where I don't think he's gotten the best representation from what we can see on the outside. I don't think that Kuminga has been well served by any of that. I do want to say just out loud, at least at some point here, I've always heard good things about Kuminga as a guy. Like, players like Jonathan Kuminga. It's not a situation where he's like a bad locker room guy where nobody likes him. It's not that. I mean, I think he was well liked in Atlanta. I even heard after he left Golden State, as much as there was some front office tension and all that stuff, the players seemed to be cool with him. So it's not a personal
thing. Kevon Looney still speaks up for him.
Yeah. So I just want to say that out loud at some point. Like, it's not a personal thing with Kuminga at all. He seems to be a pretty good guy. Mm-hmm. Maybe it'll be a change of scenery. Like, that's one of those things, like, it either works or it doesn't sometimes. Like, I covered a guy. In fact, you covered him after I did. Cam Reddish's name has come up in my mind at some point.
Yeah.
And to be very clear, Kuminga is better than Cam Reddish.
He's done
more in the NBA than Cam Reddish. But as far as like top 10 picks who thought they were better than they were, maybe, or somebody around them did, and it, like, they kind of had to figure out at some point, like, hey, I'm not going to be a star, and maybe figure out the next steps, and it never worked for Cam. At least it hasn't yet. I think that Kuminga could be well served by a better situation. And honestly, I think he would maybe be a pretty good fit in Los Angeles. Like, I've kind of thought that throughout. Maybe it's a little bit less clear right now post Zaire Williams and Matisse Thybulle ads than it was then, where he was like, hey, they really, really need Kuminga, like a week ago. But I think it really comes down to, like, what does he think he's going to be? What is he willing to buy into? I think he did what the Hawks wanted him to, which is good. That was a good data point for him. I do think that in Atlanta, where, like, he didn't come in and cause any ruckus at all. He came off the bench. He played hard. He played pretty well. That's the archetype for me. It's like, maybe you're not going to be a starter day one. Maybe the Lakers. Maybe he would be at the Lakers. You could speak to that more than I could.
Kind of has to be.
I had that same thought, but you cover the Lakers and I don't.
In Atlanta,
honestly, one of the limitations I think on his side was that he's not going to start in Atlanta. Like, that's not happening. And they knew that, and I think they want that. Whether it's the agent or Jonathan or somebody, they want to start and have a big role, and the Hawks couldn't offer him that, which is part of why he's probably not going to be back in Atlanta. I shouldn't say definitely, because it's not definitely, but probably won't be back in Atlanta. But I think there is a world in which he kind of just, like, gets in the right spot and buys in. Is there, like, there's still this idea that he's going to be a star, and I think that's, I don't want to say that's 100% out the window, but usually by the end of year five, you kind of have seen that if it's going to happen. Is there a world where he might be able to go out and average 18 points a game in the right situation? Like, yeah, definitely. I think that's possible. He averaged 16 points a game 3 years ago.
The Lakers, like,
exactly. He could do that.
I can't think of many better situations than, like, hey, catch live from Luka, operate on the weak side when Austin has the ball.
Yeah. Be able to buy in. I think that the only reason why it's not, like, perfect, maybe, is that, like, I think his side views him as a bigger role offensive player than he might be in LA. But I'm with you. Like, go out and defend, go out and you'll get open shots, run the floor. He's always, as a player, by the way, been able to get to the rim, which is a very, very effective and malleable skill. He gets to the free throw line, which is very, very helpful for a lot of teams. And while there is a split on his defense as far as how good it actually is, one, it's not bad for sure. And you can't fake, you know, 6'7", 230, and athletic. Like, he can defend. He's shown flashes of that. So, like, I hope he sees the light that, hey, I'm probably not going to be, like, a max contract player, and I won't be treated that way. But there's no reason why I can't be, like, a really good, like, fourth option on a team. Like, that's a very valuable player. And how many – every team in the league wants a 6'7", 6'8", potential two-way wing, right? Everybody's looking for that. And he still could be that.
Well, it says something that every team in the league values that archetype of player, and yet here he is looking at, like, I'm not even positive the 2-for-20 offer is still on the table from the Lakers. Like, they
how
can't
it
give
be?
It.
I mean, you can tell me. I mean, you and I talked about this a little bit offline. That number's been out there, but I keep looking. People, of course, ask me, as you might expect, on the Hawks side, like, hey, it has to be a sign and trade, right? And I'm like, well, unless the Lakers do other stuff to clear space to offer him a contract, that's the other, it's either a sign and trade or the Lakers have to trade other stuff away.
Yeah. To without getting room. Him back.
Right. Yeah. Their money is spent. Like, could they have offered him that and more 3 weeks ago? Yeah. But they clearly didn't want to do that. So the 220, I understand why it's out there. And I think I heard the same thing, but it's like that offer can't possibly still be on the table as easily as it was before because they don't have the money.
Well, that's a perfect segue into the other dynamic at play here between the Lakers and the Hawks. These two organizations love to negotiate. They love to call each other. They love to talk on the phone, but they also accomplish about as much in terms of moving players as you and I talking on the phone have historically. So I think that honestly, you and I accomplish a little bit more because at least we get podcast episodes out of it. Like they
hey, they did connect on the Luke Kennard trade. That got done. The Kennard Gabe Vincent swap got done. But yeah, without going deep, I can think of at least a handful of discussions that have happened between the Hawks and the Lakers. Some of them before the current Hawks regime. Austin Salay has only been in charge for 14 months. So it's a little bit more modern in that way. But yeah, they've definitely talked. And it's really weird because I understand why this happens, right? If you're a fan of a team, you think about your team and only your team a lot of the time.
Oh, yeah.
But I keep saying this to Lakers fans and even to Hawks fans sometimes. It's like, you have to understand that, like, there's another team involved here. The Hawks don't have to do a sign and trade just to help the Lakers. Kuminga. I mean, or Kuminga. Yeah. I mean, the Hawks are very like kumbaya-ish. Like, they want to get along, but Ante Salay is not going to just do a deal because it's a bad deal for him to help out Kuminga and the Lakers. Like, it's very clear to me. I've heard the one I've heard repeatedly throughout this process is that the Hawks are like, we don't have to do a deal. Like, no. If it's not good for us, we're not going to do it. And it's like, that seems very logical, but it's just worth repeating that over and over because a lot of this coverage is not just on this podcast, but in general, the Lakers have been the biggest talking point with Kuminga for a while, which makes sense. But also on Kuminga's side, it's like, guys, you don't have, if the Hawks aren't satisfied here, they have to be a willing partner in any discussion.
We just saw this play out with the Blazers, another front office that Rob Pelinka likes to flirt with, but never get anything done is with Joe Cronin. They're constantly talking. I the Lakers just came to an agreement with Matisse Thybulle. They haven't officially announced it yet, which I find kind of interesting. But they came to an agreement with Matisse Thybulle, and Shams reported that the Lakers and Blazers were in conversations about a sign and trade to potentially get Thybulle paid a little bit more, maybe a longer term contract or something like that. And they weren't able to come to an agreement on it. And so eventually Thybulle just accepted, all right, the only contract they can offer me is a veteran minimum. I really want to be in LA. So I guess this is what I have to do. And I'm not going to lie, that scenario has been playing out a lot in my head here, where it's like, you know, I know that Aaron Turner is linking Kuminga to the Cavs quite a bit, and yes, they technically have their mid-level exceptions to potentially offer, so it would be more that he could get from the Cleveland Cavaliers, but they're kind of focused on something else right now.
Yeah, it's so funny because they are the one team other than the Lakers that I do think Cleveland has interest. I've heard that repeatedly, but it's all conditional on not getting LeBron. Like, LeBron is obviously priority one for Cleveland. If they get him, the Kuminga interest goes away immediately. It's basically they have one role to offer. And I'm sure Aaron Turner and company are just praying that LeBron goes somewhere besides Cleveland. Because I don't know what their other option is. Maybe they have one. There was a little bit of Bucks stuff at one point, and maybe the Bucks are being used as leverage because they have some spending power that other teams don't have. But that noise has been really quiet. I mean, I really think that if it's not Cleveland, I mean, you mentioned the minimum before. I floated that to some people in Vegas. You know, we're close to the summer league as we're talking, and I got a kind of a chuckle, like, "Hey, that could happen." But also, like, on his side, I know that would be – that's like a taboo. Like, no, we are not offensive. Taking the minimum.
Yeah.
It is. They do find it – which I understand. To be fair, He's not a
middle. It is objectively way below what he should get.
Yeah, he's worth more than that full stop. I want to be very clear about that. The problem is the market matters. You have to have the offer. Like, if I'm – so I cover the Hawks, right? The Hawks have a roster crunch right now, which is part of this whole thing. If the Hawks had 12 players on their roster, it'd be a lot easier to do a deal with the Lakers than it is right now. But
yeah, look, they have 17 right, and they're $4 or $5 million from the from the hard cap. Yeah,
and they're not a tax paying team historically. So the Hawks, I mean, once the Hawks did this Lu Dort trade the other day, that was not a huge impact on Kuminga, but it did take away some of their ability to even offer him like the pillow contract. Like, maybe, hey, Jonathan, here's 2 for $16 with a team, like something better than the minimum to come back to Atlanta. They can't even really offer that anymore right now. Mm-hmm. Like, the Hawks are kind of down to their own,
let alone the minutes. Like, hey, that guy plays.
Yeah, exactly. There's not a role for him. So the Hawks have been very studious. And I know you'll have these conversations all the time with people on the Lakers side. They always tell me, we have not closed the door on Jonathan. And they're smart to not. They're smart to say that. They're smart to not. But if you look at the way they've operated for a while like he won't be on the team.
Yeah.
They're not saying that. It's like that's the way we're operating. So
we haven't closed the door on Jonathan Kuminga. And then you hear a door close in the background. Pay no attention to the door closing right behind me.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, man. I going back to the representation thing, like it's not anybody's. You can't say it's anybody's individual like fault for sure.
No.
I always want to say that like we never, even though if you and I hear stuff that not everybody hears, we never hear everything. Like there's always stuff that we just don't know. But the fact that he's in a situation where like the market really is super dry for him, it's unfortunate. It really is. Like from a personal standpoint, like I think he's worth 8 figures per season in a vacuum. But the market has to pay you that. And the market doesn't, maybe 2 for $20 is out. Maybe the Lakers have a fail-safe ejector seat where they can be like, you know what, if he says, is 220 still available, they can shed here and offer him that. You know better than I do on that, but it doesn't seem like it's easy anymore. And I don't know where it's coming from.
Once they made the Austin Reeves signing official, they become an above the cap team. They've used their exceptions already. So they like before they announced Austin's deal and before they announced some of the other moves that their moves and signings that they had made, they could have operated below the cap and say like waived and stretched Jared Vanderbilt. And that would have opened up 10-ish million bucks. There was some stuff that I heard. I think Wendy brought it up on his show today about DeAndre Ayton and how he could have been a Hawk. If Kuminga would have been more open to the $10 million contract there.
Conceivable, for sure.
That was interesting to hear about and then hear Wendy talk about it as well. But the sting of it here, like the issue at play here is like you said, Atlanta has their roster crunch. They have a hard cap, which is only a hop, skip, and a jump away. And yes, like they're trying to bring their roster number down without just eating contracts. But also it's like I tweeted this a little while back. The path to flexibility in today's NBA isn't as much through cap space anymore. I think draft picks, because of this lottery system, which is kind of all over the place, until we know more about how that's actually going to play out in practice, draft picks are worth a little bit less than they have been historically. But the only tried and true method that has been proven and proven again and proven over one more time, to the only path to that flexibility, is to have good basketball players on your team. And for the Lakers, like right now, the talks that they've had so far is like that there's one package where it's Jake LaRavia and no draft picks going out the door. There's another package where it's Jaden Hardy and Dalton Connect with one second round pick that they would attach to that to sweeten the pot for Atlanta. In both of those cases, it sounds like Atlanta is asking for like one additional second round pick in both of those spots. And that's why those talks have kind of stalled out the way that they have. But at the end of the day here for the Lakers, if Dalton had been developed, this would be done already. Like if Dalton yeah. wasn't as disappointing a prospect, this would be done. And the problem is, like, we talk about how Jonathan Kuminga is viewed around the league. Imagine how Dalton Kinect is viewed around the league, where this guy's on a $5 million expiring contract. He's a former first round pick and somebody who everybody was shocked that he fell down the draft the way that he did. And they were shocked by it because of his like unquestionable, just individual talent. And yet, like, at the end of the day, nobody wants him at that $5 million, or the Atlanta in this case wants the pot sweetened if they do take on Dalton.
Yeah. And they should, in my opinion. I mean, again, I'm not the one in charge, yeah. but like the most attractive of all of the kind of end of roster scenarios to me would be Laravia, because he's expiring mm-hmm. and I think he's a decent player. But Laravia is like has limited value to the Hawks right now. Like the Hawks have yeah. a roster crush. So
many wings.
He'd be their 18th player on a 15-man roster, and they just added Lou Dort and Aaron Wiggins, and they already have Dyson Daniels and all these, without going through the entire Hawks thing. Like, I like Jake Laravia at that contract. And that's a pretty solid mm-hmm. piece to have on your roster. But for the Hawks, there's pretty minimal excitement about that. And with, you know, if they didn't have the roster crunch, maybe. But also the funny thing about the Laravia thing is that's only $6 million. That means Kuminga is taking what in a trade, in a contract. To be matched only by Laravia, he's taking 10-ish. And he's, to my mind, been unwilling to take that. Even if the Hawks wanted to do that trade, Kuminga has to agree to that. And I don't think he's ready to do – maybe he is now, but he hasn't been ready to agree to that. Even if – and I think the Hawks won't do that right now. I think they'd have to be incentivized. You mentioned picks earlier. Like, there's a world where if the Lakers had, like, a real first – not a swap, a real first to offer to take a Vanderbilt swap. They might have done that 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
For a real first, but not for a swap with the Lakers. Like, they're not going to do that. Why would they? That's not worth the swap of, you know. So there's various, you and I have even exchanged ideas about this offline. It's like, there isn't an obvious trade that the Hawks would do that the Lakers would offer. I just don't understand. I mean, maybe they'll get to something, but it seems like a flirtation that may not go anywhere in the end.
The other interesting aspect of this is if the Lakers do, by some miracle, and I don't think Kuminga's camp would consider it a miracle, but if they do land Kuminga at the minimum and then he outplays that contract, they don't have a ton of spending power to be able to keep him next year. So that's another reason that they would honestly prefer to assign and trade, to give themselves that opportunity, you know, because that involves a 3-year deal. And yes, options are usually involved there, but that would at least give them some flexibility to be able to keep him beyond the season. Because here's the thing. Objectively speaking, if the Lakers get him at a minimum contract, Jonathan Kuminga would very easily outplay that contract by a lot, by a lot. And also, if Kuminga does go to the Lakers and outplays that contract and accepts the role that the whole league is waiting for him to kind of accept, now you would have a lot more burgeoning a market for Kuminga next summer, at a time where I think there's going to be a few more teams that might have a little bit more jangle in their pocket to be able to spend. So it's a I was asking around in anticipation of this episode just to see what his and their, meaning the Lakers, options would be here. And it's just not a ton of them. And so either the Lakers are going to get this guy well below market value, but probably lose him next year, or he goes to Cleveland if, like, LeBron goes to Miami, or he goes to Milwaukee if Milwaukee just says, well, shit, we may as well sign this guy to a $8 to $10 million deal. What else are we going to be doing? And that's how I could see this all playing out. But I find it really difficult to envision Kuminga returning to Atlanta. That's the one scenario here that I would probably pretty comfortably eliminate.
It does seem unlikely to, like, I'm, because I you know, my BS meter is always running, but I'm not ruled it out in my head, because the Hawks haven't, and they don't have any reason to tell me that they have. But, like, I think it'd have to be a very specific situation for him to come back to Atlanta. Like, I think that's not likely at all to happen, especially, you know, you could argue maybe the Lou Dort thing, just he replaces Zachary Shishay, but Lu Dort is a worse fit with Jonathan Kuminga than Zachary Richey was.
Yeah.
And Lu Dort makes more money than Zachary Richey does. The Hawks have less spending power than they did before. All of these things, like, I'll say what I said before, like, they are operating like a team that is not expecting to have him on their roster. And doesn't mean they wouldn't be willing to facilitate something. Like, I think I mentioned the Bucks before once. If I'm the Bucks, I would offer a deal that Kuminga should take before he takes the minimum with the Lakers. But I don't know if they're offering that. They have a trade exception if they want to use it, and they have the non-taxpayer mid-level. If the Bucks want to offer either of those things, they can do that. And I don't know how interested they are. Maybe the Kuminga side will be bailed out by the Cavs. Maybe we hear LeBron goes to the Heat or LeBron goes somewhere else, and the Cavs are like kind of desperate because they've already decided they want to have this archetype. Obviously, LeBron and Kuminga are not the same player, but you know what I mean. Yeah. And they turn around and they get aggressive enough with the Hawks where the Hawks are like, sure, we'll help you out. Here it is. Take whatever it is, the either the MLE or a Max Strus sign and trade or whatever you want to say it would be. But until LeBron doesn't go to Cleveland, it's like, I don't know what to do. It's people, I mean, I'm sure this happens to you. Every day of my life for the last month has been, what's Jonathan Kuminga's market? And I'm just like, shrug emoji. It's tough.
I had a commenter the other day say, like, God, all of your episodes sound the same. It's Jonathan Kuminga for a little bit, a couple of jokes making fun of Rob Pelinka, and then you answer some questions. It's like, it's July 21st, bud.
Fortunately, I've been kind of busy because the Hawks keep doing stuff. Like, the Hawks just made a big trade 2 days ago. I was trying to enjoy my Sunday, and they decided to make a giant trade. So I was not happy with the timing about that. But yeah, I haven't had to do quite as much, I'm sure, as you have on this only, because I have other things going on. The Hawks have 17 players on their roster. So it's like, hey, they have to cut someone or trade someone. And unfortunately, trading Jonathan Kuminga does not clear up the Hawks roster crunch. It's a separate issue to some degree.
Yeah, the Lakers technically have 16, right? So they're looking for that consolidation trade as well. And Kuminga would be that consolidation trade. The problem is that the Hawks are in an even worse spot.
Yeah, the Hawks do not want to do a 3-for-1 for Jonathan Kuminga. I can promise you that. They don't want to. Maybe if they had other places to send those guys, they could do it. But yeah.
I didn't plan to talk to you about this. So sorry to kind of drop this on your doorstep here. But I was looking at the way that the Hawks roster came together this summer, and it is a whole bunch of wings who can defend. It is a team that is going to have $40 million or so in cap space next year. And it's a team, though, that is slightly, I think, below the Mendoza line from an offensive creativity standpoint. Austin Reeves was somebody who was on, like, the Hawks were, we were told coming into the summer, we're a team to keep an eye on for Austin. Heard a lot that Quinn Snyder is a big Austin Reeves fan. And obviously it didn't play out. Austin is going to remain a Laker for the season. But one thing that I heard a lot about in Vegas and had a lot of conversations about in Vegas was, like, if this Lakers team doesn't succeed in the playoffs, Austin is kind of the guy who needs to be moved. And I was looking at Atlanta's roster as a possibility or a potential fit where, you know, the one thing the Hawks have in abundance are these two-way wings that you would like to surround Luka Doncic with. What would you think about a possible fit there for Reeves next season or this upcoming summer if, in fact, the Lakers do flame out early in the playoffs?
I think it's conceivable for sure. I mean, every time I talk about the Hawks having up to 45-ish million in space and all these expiring contracts, the follow-up question is, of course, who are they going to use it on, right? Yeah. And you said this earlier, but trades are more likely than free agents. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, free agency can work, but it takes a lot of things for a guy to get to free agency at this point. Most guys end up signing extensions and then get trade extensions by design. The only free agent name I've been able to float is, like, if Peyton Watson takes the qualifying offer from Denver, which he might do, by the way. Maybe he hits the market next summer and it's a good talk target because the Hawks like him. Okay, that makes sense. But to Reeves, yeah, I don't know if they would be as excited about him on his contract that he's now making, which is, I would say, market value. I mean, it's not some crazy number, but it's not like he's a bargain on that contract.
No, I don't think anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he I think it makes sense on a lot of fronts because the Hawks could take him in they could probably do an imbalanced trade because the Hawks will have so much cap space. They could probably send something back to the Lakers without having to match entirely up to $40 million if they wanted to. I don't think it would be in season, right? It had to be in the summer. Saying
I think it would have to be
a year from now.
It's the kind of thing that
makes total sense.
Yeah. Like it's one of those situations where, this is just kind of playing out how this season could potentially go. Right. And the Lakers, they don't have any first round draft capital that they can trade on any other day than draft days for the next like 7 years or whatever the number is. And, you know, they have some younger guys who are interesting in theory, but are very unproven, right? You have the Udo Thieros and Cam Carrs of the world who in theory could eventually become, interesting enough as actual players and actual, practical talents that a team would be interested enough to supply the Lakers with that kind of two-way wing that they clearly still need. But like if we do get to the end of the season and it is clear that the Lakers aren't where they need to be defensively because the starting point of the roster is $100 million devoted every year to Luka Doncic and Austin Reeves, then maybe just maybe that conversation comes back up. And I was kind of looking around and Atlanta makes a lot of sense. And I think Austin makes some sense for them in that like he's not terrible defensively. I think it's kind of overblown, like the conversation about Austin defensively, but he is excellent as a creator, an engine on offense. We've seen him play that role in spots where Luka isn't available, LeBron isn't available. And Atlanta has more than enough athleticism to make up for any of those defensive deficiencies. So it was just something I was kind of thinking about over the course of the combo.
It's not crazy at all. I mean, I think that this might sound weird for what I'm about to say, but Reeves might be a little bit older than they want, which is funny because he's still kind of young.
It's crazy, dude. He's the oldest player on the Lakers right now.
Yeah. So, but no, as far as like archetypally skill set wise, like the Hawks basically turning or going from CJ McCollum to Austin Reeves would be a big upgrade to what they're trying to do. I don't know if they would fire that bullet on Austin Reeves on this contract, especially if things just didn't go well in LA, not because of Reeves. You know what I mean? Like if he's now freely available, like it's clearly for a reason to some degree. But your thought process makes total sense. The Hawks are the kind of team that could be a landing spot. If the Lakers were like in a year from now, like, oh, we probably got to trade Reeves now. I think they should and probably would call Atlanta. I don't know if Atlanta is going to be eager to do that at that point, but I wouldn't cross them off. Like it would make some sense.
Yeah. The other team that made some sense was Detroit for a lot of the same reasons. And then we got that report that they were allegedly trying to open up cap space to make an offer to Austin, which by the way, they never did. So my BS meter was running on that one, but still like in terms of types of roster that Austin would fit on, those two teams really kind of stand out to me as possibilities just in case the Lakers do decide, okay, we do want more athleticism on the perimeter. We do want, you know, maybe Grimes isn't enough as a point of attack defender and we can't really upgrade anywhere else using the players that we have. Maybe. All right, let's jump really quickly into the chat to see if you guys have any questions or comments for Brad and myself. This one is not a Hawks question, but I'll answer it. Any chance the Lakers look into GG Jackson as an option at power forward? Maybe not the best, but his youth and defensive upside is intriguing. That was the point of the Zaire Williams signing. We kind of covered this one, but did Kuminga blow up by passing on LA's 2-year, $20 million offer when they could still clear cap space? I think pretty clearly, yes. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, charitably, you could say we'll see, but I don't think he's going to get better than that now. Maybe I'll be wrong, but I would say charitably, I'll say we'll see, but I would say probably.
I hate where we're at in having to cover these cap situations because of the apron. Like, literally, it used to be, you would laugh at a bad contract because it would impact some owner's luxury tax or whatever. But like at the end of the day, like it didn't have that practical a detriment. It wasn't so detrimental to your team's books, so that you just kind of laugh at it and you move on. Now we actually do have to become accountants. We actually do, like,
yeah.
Atlanta is literally hard capped 4 or 5 minutes from $4 or $5 million from where they are. They don't pay the luxury tax anyway, typically. So, but like the Lakers are hard capped at the first apron. Nobody is going above the second apron. And now, like, we now, to a certain extent, and fans now, to a certain extent, have to, like, root for these guys to find themselves in the spot that Kuminga finds himself in, which sucks. Yeah. I don't think it's healthy for fandom or the players.
No, the basketball is more fun. We all got into this for the basketball. Like, basketball, yes, discussion is more fun than this. I am a nerd about this stuff. Like, I do know it all. I think, to your point, we kind of have to know it all to be able to talk about this stuff as freely as we end up having to talk about it. But, and there's some team building aspects. There always have been. Money has always mattered in the NBA because it's a salary cap league. It's always going to matter to some degree.
Yeah.
But it matters more than ever now because of all the machinations you have to navigate. And we're in a different spot in this way. You cover a legacy franchise who's won a lot of things and have a lot of stars. And I cover the Hawks, who've never been to the finals. And if the Hawks almost have to put their roster together perfectly. It has, yes, to go perfectly in Atlanta. The one time they won 60 games was with a no superstar team, and it was because they put everything together awesomely, and they still lost the conference finals. But like, the margins are even thinner for the non glamour market teams. Like, they have to, because you don't just fall into Luka Doncic like the Lakers did. I mean, maybe the Hawks, you could argue the Hawks could have drafted Luka Doncic. I understand that. But the established version,
right, maybe not the example to use there.
You're right. Long story short, you're right. Like, I am a sicko on this stuff. I do enjoy the machinations, but like, I don't like to root against players getting paid. Like, that's, you know, these guys just, I mean, look, I know they're all rich. I understand that. But like, I like players to get paid well. Like, that makes sense. Yeah. Rather than owners to save all the money. I know there's BRI and all that stuff. But like, it is kind of, I have to say, as a responsible analyst, like, the team should squeeze harder on certain things. And like, I don't take any pleasure in saying that, but it's like, to do your job well, if you have a guy who's restricted, for example, the Hawks have done some stuff in the past where it's like, you could have just waited. Like, you could have squeezed harder. And I feel bad saying that, but you kind of have to say that. With Kuminga, it's the same thing. The Hawks don't have to do him a favor. Would it be nice in the kumbaya world if they were like, all right, Jonathan, we'll do you a huge solid and ruin our own books to get you paid? But they're not going to do that, nor should they.
No. We got a super comment here, which means we get to play the most important sound on the show, which, Brad, I think you'll agree with. Fuck Washington! All right.
I wasn't ready for it. I'm good now. Go ahead. Sorry, I'm good. I wasn't ready. We're fine. I like that. That's a super comment. That's good.
It's incentive. Like, I'll have some people sometimes just drop a super comment that just says, fuck Boston. It's like, I agree. I agree. Matthew the Sicilian writes, thanks for joining, Brad. Where do you see the ceiling/floor in wins for the season for the Hawks? Do you think there was any truth to Snyder liking Vando? So we'll go with the first one. The first question first. Ceiling/floor for wins for the Hawks this season.
Ceiling, floor. I think ceiling, they probably could win in like the mid-50s if things went really well. Like, I think that's reasonable. Every year you get a team or two that outperforms their projections. Last year it was Detroit in the East that was like, they won 60. I don't think anyone would have said even their ceiling was 60 this time last year, and they went above that. So I'm not going to say 60, but I could see the Hawks winning in the mid-50s if things went well. Floor, are we doing like realistic floor, like non-injury disaster floor? Like, if Jalen Johnson rolls something and misses the season, then it goes down a lot because they really need his offense. I would say, I don't know, high 30s wins, like play, like 10 seed in the East, 11 seed in the East, high 30s wins is probably their floor.
Floors are a little higher, like, than that. I try to use
the word floor, like, real
500. Yeah,
I don't either, but I'm trying, you know, I think people, my philosophy is generally people tend to think the floor is higher than it actually is on most things.
Yeah.
Like, especially on the player side. I'm sure you've rolled your eyes before, like in the draft process. It's like, this guy's floor is prime Tim Duncan. And it's like, well, that's not a floor. That's not a thing that exists. You know what I mean? Like, I always laugh. It's like, yeah, if that was his floor, he'd be the number one overall pick. Like, whichever.
Your
whichever
floor pick is on top of the house.
Yeah, this guy's a late lottery pick, and his floor is like prime Gilbert Arenas. And it's like, nope, that's not his floor. I promise you it's not, or he wouldn't go 15th in the draft.
No, I always like the player comps that are like combinations of two players. So it'll be like Gilbert Arenas, but with like Andre Iguodala's defense. It's like, that's the greatest player.
Right. That's a Hall of Famer, like an Inner Circle Hall of Famer immediately. No, I'm with you. Oh, I should say I should answer the Vando part, right? Yeah. I don't know about Snyder liking Vando. Like, I know Vando was in Utah, but that was after Snyder left, I believe, for a year. I think that was with Will Hardy, pretty sure.
I think there was slight overlap.
Maybe there was a little bit. I don't know for sure. I will say that the healthy version of Vando, I could see Snyder liking. I don't know if he does, though. I don't have a reporting on that. Let's see. And regardless of that, I can tell you the Hawks would not treat him as anything approaching an even asset. I think he's obviously a negative value contract at this moment, and everyone understands that on all sides, including
it was not. It was. You were right. It was Will Hardy was, the coach on that.
I know it was like right around the same time that Snyder would have left and Harder would have come, like right around that time. But he might like him. I don't know that, and he's not the GM. So that combination of factors.
There's that as well. See, case in point, I said, you know, we'll get this comment from time to time. Fuck Boston. There you go. It's like, yes. And now I have to play the sound again. Fuck Boston!
You have to give people what they want. There's people exactly. What they always say. That's part of the job.
This has been a blast as always, Brad. It's always really fun. I actually like kind of perk up a little bit when I see that the Lakers and Hawks are like linked in a rumor or linked in a story or something like that. I'm like, fuck yeah, I get to talk to Brad. Anything that you want to plug or anything before we get you out of here?
No, nothing that we haven't already talked about. You know, if you like to follow the Hawks, if you are interested in the Hawks or the NBA at large, I do host a Locked On Hawks podcast. That's the main thing. I still write about the league at large a little bit less than I used to. RIP to Dime, where I wrote for years and years, and it's no longer exists, unfortunately. Locked On Hawks. I'm at BT Roland on Twitter and Blue Sky. If people want to follow me there, also on Patreon. That's a Hawks only thing. So if I can't imagine people want to do that, but hey, feel free to give me money if you want to.
Just in case.
That's fine. Yeah. I won't stop you from giving me money. But no, Locked On Hawks is the place. And I always appreciate getting the invite. I was excited to get it. I'm glad we could do this.
We did get a question here right at the end that we do have to address from Matthew the Sicilian. Does Bontemps like him?
like Vando or like me? I think he doesn't like me.
Ooh.
No, I'm kidding. Full disclosure, I'm friends with Tim.
Yeah.
Full disclosure, I'm friends with Tim.
He's like super friendly. Now. Like this is a thing that like he's like super like, you know, like on the pod and stuff like that.
He's just a New Yorker. But that's all it is.
That's their default setting. Is just it is.
Tim's a very nice man. I know he. He's a New Yorker. No, I'm excited that he's moving to Atlanta. That's going to be cool because I liked him. People always ask me what he's going to do with the Hawks, and then I tell him that, and he's like, just tell him I'm with the Hawks. He doesn't ever want to talk about what he's actually going to be doing. So does he like – I will text him after this and say, do you like Jared Vanderbilt with no context and see if he answers me.
He'll just say no.
He'll be like, no comment as a member of the Hawks.
Not at that contract.
Yeah, that's the real answer to everybody with Jared Vanderbilt is not at that contract. Everyone would say that. So
even the Lakers would say that.
Truly.
As always, please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Turn on notifications for the show and for YouTube. Today's show, as always, brought to you in video form by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA and get $150 worth of free Prize Picks picks or lineups. When you sign up, use that code and win a $5 lineup of your own. Brad, this has been an absolute blast. Thank you again for hopping on. Hope you all have a great rest of your evening. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.